Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with Paul John Roach, Minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here's your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. It's a crisp day, but it's a very sunny day, so we can't complain. Today I welcome award-winning journalist and writer Cash Peters to the show, a former attorney. Cash was well known on BBC Radio and even BBC Television before his involvement as a commentator on American Public Radio. As a writer, he's written novels, parodies, travel books, and most recently books on spirituality and health. And today we'll focus on two of those books. First one is a little book about believing, a spiritual travelogue of Cash's experience with John of God in Brazil, and Why Your Life Matters, a spiritual handbook presented in a sort of novelistic or parable format, and contains a lot of information and principles that we would be very familiar with in Unity, set forth in a compelling way. So it's a pleasure to welcome Cash Peters to our show today. Welcome.
Hi there. I am so pleased to be here. Actually, I was never an attorney, just to correct that. I have a law degree and was going to be an attorney. I decided that I couldn't justify arguing with people for a living and standing in musty old courtrooms while people argued with me. And I just peeled, much to my parents' horror, I peeled away and never became an attorney. And I will always be grateful for that decision.
Well, there we go. But you do have a law degree, so we were partially accurate. Yeah.
Okay. Partially accurate, that's right. But good morning, yes, hi.
That's good enough for journalism to be partially accurate. No, I'm just kidding.
I've always been grateful for it. It was never a bad decision to have a law degree. I recommend people get them, but I don't necessarily recommend that you go on and become a lawyer afterwards.
Right, yeah. Well, you certainly have to think through things, don't you, when you study in that way, and that's always good, to look at things from both sides, and of course that's part of what journalists do as well. And as spiritual seekers, I think we have to look at both parts of ourselves, you know, the human and the divine, and embrace the two. You know, it's a question of not denying one or the other, but to unfold them together. I know your books emphasize that fact, that you know, the way to faith-filled living is to embrace our fears and understand them rather than try and squelch them. And you do this in your book, of course, in your books. So tell us a little bit about your journey and your more recent interest in spiritual matters, because you've come a long way, haven't you, in all the things that you've done. I'd love to read the book about going down the Rhone Valley in Provence, too. That sounds like a great book.
That was a different kind of book. That was a different kind of journey, but it was a very, very enjoyable one. And I've been a travel writer since I was in Britain, actually. I was a travel broadcaster on the radio in Britain for many years, but I was really just a sort of journalist who did oddball things. And after a while, I came over here and brought that over here thinking, well, I'll just do the same thing in America. It didn't work in Britain, but it's bound to work in America. And I came here and found out it was just a soulless existence. It was, you were commenting on what other people were doing.
Right.
And you weren't really doing anything yourself. But more to the point, I got a travel show on TV, which is kind of my ultimate goal when I was in my teens. I wanted a travel show on TV. And what that enabled me to do was to travel all over the world at somebody else's expense. And you think,
that was
wow,
nice.
Great, I know you've traveled a lot as well, and travel is great for the mind, great for the spirit, it opens your eyes. But what I found was that I wasn't I was kind of interested in the job, but I wasn't really interested in the job. The actual travel and the filming and all the stuff we had to do for the show seemed incidental somehow. What was really interesting to me was the people I met and their views on life and on spirituality and on God and what life means and why we're here. And I met so many people, and my conversation, once the cameras were off, was always about this. It was always this kind of topic. And the more I did it, and the more I realized that, this reporting thing is not for me. I'm okay, but I could have done it for the rest of my life. But there comes a point where you go, I am way more interested in this. I am way more interested in finding out the common truths that hold us all together, that provide the sinew of this great civilization that we are, and this great race that we are, and this great species that we are. I am far more interested in what holds us all together than simply commenting on what you're doing today, or how you built your house, or what you're eating for lunch. And that's how it really kind of came about. I realized in Britain something was wrong, and by coming over here, I was given the opportunity to find out why it was wrong, and that I had to drop it completely. And I haven't looked back since, actually. It's been an amazing journey, and I've had more success with the spiritual stuff and by putting these guidelines and truths and experiences in books than I ever did on the radio or on television.
Yeah, interesting. And of course, you know, Britain and Europe in general is pretty secular, isn't it? Whereas when you come to the States, there's still the underpinning of a spiritual and you know, not just church going, but a spiritual consciousness here, and so the Americans in general are receptive to matters of spirit, I think, and of religion in a way that Europeans find them kind of peripheral or even sketchy. You know, why do you need the crutch of religion? That's not the case over here, though. I think alternative spiritualities welcomed in Europe. I think, you know, Buddhism, paganism, things like that, but probably not your regular Church of England type stuff, you know, or other denominations.
No, but Americans are not always, but in vast numbers, they are open-minded to things. I mean, a lot of things happen over here that would never happen in Europe because they're so stuck in their old ways, and they move a lot slower over there. This being a young country, people are more spontaneous and opportunistic, and they'll try things where they wouldn't in Britain. Also, I mean, the thing that staggers me, I think, still about Britain, when I see things online or I hear interviews or whatever, what staggers me still is that when they talk about religion, they immediately go to God. And when they go to God, they are still, in their primitive way, arguing over whether there's a man in the sky, in the clouds that we can't see, judging us and making decisions for us and you know, giving us illnesses, as though it's some kind of exterior force, some agency outside ourselves, which is in control of our lives. And they're still having that argument. When they talk about, do you believe in God, or why are you an atheist, or why do you not belong to a religion, what comes up for most of the conversation is that thing about, well, you're saying there's a God who's watching over me and gave me cancer when I was 10 years old. I find that unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. They haven't moved beyond that simple stage, and they can't see God as something. I mean, I'm making sweeping generalizations. Not everybody's like that, but there is still that great predominance there of secularism based on a simple failure to connect certain links in the chain. And they go to me, oh, well, I don't believe in God. I said, well, it doesn't matter whether you believe or not. You're actually saying, I don't believe in a man in the sky with a beard making judgments. I'm asking you to maybe open your mind to the possibility that that was a bad idea to begin with,
yeah.
And then maybe something else. And maybe it's not on the outside working in, so there's nothing to beseech to as such. There's nothing to even pray to or sing to or worship necessarily. It may be that it's more of an alignment with the force that you already are and the force that connects us all, and that God is within and not without. And I can see that. I can see their eyes glaze over. But they don't argue with that. They will actually take that and go, well, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm,
whereas if
exactly.
you argue in with them about God as a religious figure, you're doomed. You'll never get anywhere.
Right, exactly. And that is the huge shift, isn't it? The paradigm shift from that old way of seeing things, you know, as of it and me, you know, separation, in other words, and this unitive idea that, oh, well, maybe it's more subtle than that. Maybe it's about energies. Maybe it's about totalities rather than separation. So I think whenever when we come to that breakthrough moment, there's an aha, and then we realize, oh, my goodness, maybe things are more wonderful than I'd considered, you know, that I don't have to throw out everything. The baby with the bathwater, but I can see it in a new light and in a more mature, I would say, light. You know, that those old they're really childish, actually, aren't they? The idea of this judging man on a cloud is part of a tribal system that is. I think we need to move beyond that. It's hampering us really in our progress as long as we hold on to those old images.
I agree. I absolutely agree. That separation is disempowering, because
right.
it basically means that you will say, okay, I'm in trouble. I'm going to pray and pray and pray and pray and pray for God to come and rescue me. And it doesn't take into account that you are part of your own solution. It's about being an adult, about being responsible, about understanding that instead of beseeching an outside agency to come to your rescue and love you and show you mercy and be compassionate and be kind, it's for you to be kind and loving and be those things, and your life will improve and fear will diminish and so on. As long as you're waiting and beseeching some outside force to come in and ride to your rescue like a white knight, you're going to spend your entire life in fear and misery and frustration, because it's never
right.
going to happen. The moment you become that person you want to come and rescue, you be that person. It's remarkable how everything changes around, I think.
Absolutely. I love what Eric Butterworth, the great Unity minister and author as well, wrote. He wrote, prayer is not a position, it's a disposition. And I love that. It's not a place of getting down on your knees, like you say, beseeching. It's changing your disposition about what all this is about in itself, and coming into that alignment. And Butterworth talked a lot about what you mentioned, is, you know, aligning oneself with the divine. And this is a pure unity viewpoint as well, that it's not about begging God out there. It's coming into alignment with the divinity that's within us and around us, because I think it's not just imminent, it's not just inside us, it's all around us as well, it's transcended. And sometimes in unity we've discovered the God within, and we forget there's a God that's totally unknowable and wondrous and beyond our imagination all around us as well. And I think we have to leave mystery for that, you know, room for that mystery. And you talk about that, don't you, in your book. You talk a lot about surrender, which is this idea of allowing that infinite presence that's unknowable in some sense to be in us, to move through us. And I think that's a very profound place to be.
Yeah, and it's also about getting this kind of sister idea to that. I was talking to somebody yesterday about this, actually. The sister idea to that is in fact, getting your ego out of the way. And instead of chasing life around, or what you want around, like a headless chicken, and just running after it all the time,
right.
You actually treat life more like a kind of comfortable armchair. Set your intentions, decide what feels right that you want, and then relax into it and do, as you say, surrender into that. And it's very hard for people to understand that. I know that I feel very fortunate that I've got friends who are very devout Christians in the traditional born-again sense. I mean, they're very, very devout and very vocal in their beliefs. And we have many conversations, and it really is the stumbling point for them when you say what you've just said, which is that, and what we've been talking about, that idea of being the disposition and the being rather than the believing, the knowing rather than the having to believe in whatever your tribe has taught you. It's and beseeching God and praying and worshiping. It's a very, very hard step for them to take because they've bought into this system of belief that says everything is out there, everything, you're powerless, and everything is judging you, everything is coming at you, and there's nothing you can do unless God steps in. But once you start laying out for them those ideas that maybe you are more powerful than you thought, maybe you are part of the solution, maybe God is within, the things you just said, they can't deny it. But it causes them to really have to reconsider and reconfigure their approach to this. And they argue and argue and argue and argue. They argue and argue and argue. But in the end, it doesn't shift the fact that they are fearful still. They
right.
are lost still. They still don't understand. They're still dissecting ambiguous passages in the Bible.
Right.
For some kind of answer, when in fact they look at you and go, really? You're telling me I know? I know already? It's a very interesting, I've had many great conversations with Christians about these things, and I'm convinced that we're not that far off from bringing them over to our side of the fence, actually, of getting them to surrender and go, oh yeah, okay. Okay, maybe I was trying too hard. Maybe there is no white knight coming. Maybe it's more down to me. Because there was that guy, Spong, the Bishop Spong, who said
sure.
about, I love that guy, and he was saying about how the reason they're called born again is because they remain children that way. You never
yes.
have to grow up and take responsibility for your life. And the moment you stop being born again and actually grow up, and become mature is when you really come into your power.
Right. One thing I admire about more evangelical Christians is their commitment. They're definitely full on with their belief, and that can be a plus because, sometimes in New Thought and Unity, we tend to be a little bit more, less committed because, there's nothing impelling us in the same way that impels them. And the other downside, I think, to New Thought is that, this emphasis on self, the self-worth and everything can sometimes lead to hubris when we mistake our egos, for our true selves, that we spiritualize our egos. And so we've got a lot of people who are, confused about that, I think. So, there's a little bit of work to do there to not get involved with a spiritually materialistic viewpoint. And anyway, we're at the break. We can talk some more about that in the second segment if we want. I'm with a very lively fellow, as you could tell. His name is Cash Peters. He's written numerous books. He's a broadcaster, and now he's on my show, and it's a fun thing. So let's listen to these messages from Unity, and we'll be right back, folks. Join us in a couple of minutes.
When Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Have you seen Unity Magazine lately? There's a new editor, a fresh new look, and now Unity Magazine has gone digital. Print subscribers, you can access Unity Magazine for free from your computer or mobile device. Non-subscribers can buy single digital issues through Google Play, Amazon, and the Apple Store. Sign up at our website and let Unity Magazine become your favorite digital resource for spirituality and inspiration. To learn more, visit unitymagazine.org/digital.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Cash Peters, and he's written a number of books, but the ones we're focusing on today are a little book about believing, about his time with John of God, that interesting healer from Brazil, and then the most recent book, which is Why Your Life Matters. It's presented in novelistic format. But it's really about the spiritual path and how to embrace the principles, really. Not just know about them, but how to live from them. And I want to talk about each of those books in a minute. Just musing on this idea of being, living a vicarious existence, you know, like a journalist. I'm musing if that's, you know, the Brian Williams syndrome, you know, that he's fallen from grace recently, because although he earned $10 million a year, et cetera, he still had to, elaborate on incidents and lie basically about them, that his involvement. And I'm wondering if it comes from that same thing, you know, that he was almost jealous of people who are actually doing stuff rather than just reporting on stuff, and he felt he had to be part of it. It's a sad case, but you look through that lens, I can understand, you know, some of where he was. I don't agree with it, but I can understand it at least.
You know, the rush for ratings in television is such a pressure on anybody. And I think that they just try to one-up each other all the time. My brief time in television here in America, I found to be way too pressured. It was just, you couldn't be just honest. I didn't find anybody being honest and just saying, hey, let's do the best thing for the show or the best thing in this situation with these people. It all seemed to be about what's expedient. And when you get to swapping what's right or what's true for what's expedient, then, as you said before the break there, the ego starts running away with you. Because you're not doing what your soul, what your very intuition is telling you is the right thing. And in fact, just coming back to what you said before the break as well, about the ego and how we wrestle with that and so on, I think that happens particularly in healing. And I've had a theory for a while, because I've had many friends over the years either get very, very sick and die or get very sick and get well, luckily. But there's a way in which life and the body and spirit strips away the ego. And no matter how you were successful, no matter if you earned $10 million a year, if you had a private jet, or you had three houses, when it comes to your health, it's a great leveler. and it forces you to surrender. And I've been convinced for quite a number of years, maybe it is my early Christian Science upbringing, but I've been convinced for a while that if you get a bit above yourself, life will step in, often with illness or some kind of debilitating accident or whatever. Life will step in and it will level you. Now, it's happened with him. It's actually come back to haunt him, his lies. But with this, with healing, I think people go through their life and go, why me, God? Why have I got stage 4 cancer? What happened? I had a friend die only a year ago this month, and he did everything right by his health. When he died, they had to clear out all his cabinets of 1,000 pills and all things that he'd just accumulated over the years. And the truth was that this guy was a massive ego. He would be convinced that he was going to live till he was like 110. But by the time he got to 90, they would have invented something to allow him to live another 20 years healthily.
Right.
And you know, life stepped in. And I remember the day when something happened. He just went over the threshold and realized that he was mortal, that he had to surrender, that if he was going to get well, he was going to have to say, okay, I throw myself on whatever you want to call it, fate, grace, God, whatever, and that's the only way I'm going to get well. It doesn't matter how much I am worth, doesn't matter what I own, this is where I'm going to have to throw myself on God. And he couldn't, and he didn't, and he died.
Right.
And that's some people, I mean, I can't say that's a choice. He was very, very sick, but it's some people's destiny to kind of go down that route. But with healing, I think it's the rawest time when your ego is asked to surrender, and you have a choice very often whether you surrender or you just get really sick or you die or whatever.
Yeah, and there's a difference between being cured and being healed, isn't there? You know, I think you can die healed, if you like, and people around you will say, well, you know, she died of whatever, you know, she didn't get the healing. But I, you know, we're all going to die, and I think it's the way we die, really. A case in point is my late wife, who died of breast cancer now, I don't know, 12 years ago. And, you know, I feel she died having been healed in some way, because she was a light to many people and died with grace. You know, she couldn't stop the cancer, but there really wasn't about it in the end. She knew it was going to get her. So it was, how do I live fully in these last 6 months, you know? And she burned brightly in those last 6 months. And to me, that's inspiration. You know, that's what we're talking about here. So it's not about continuing in the body forever, is it? It's understanding what your role in life is, you know, what your destiny, your karma, if you like, is, and living that to the full, yes.
And being willing to release your grip when
yes.
it's time, and because it is going to be your time. And I've had many contemporaries, especially from my radio days in Britain, die already, and it's astonishing that they died, because I'm still here. Why me? I was the most useless of them all. Why would I be the one that survived everybody? But you know, I don't think you have to look at it that way. You have to, like you said, burn brightly every day.
Yes.
Be the best you can be every day, and improve every day if you can. Learn and not be so convinced that you're right about things that you can't shift your position if new information comes along, and you can't look after your body and treat it the way it wants to be treated, all these different things. And then when your time comes, you hope it's not going to be in pain. You hope it's not going to be something that lingers over years. But it is your time. And just, again, accept it. You learn that at the John of God place down in Brazil, as a matter of fact, that for some people get healed. They get healed of cancer. They get healed of terrible afflictions that they've gone down there with. And some people go down there, they have all the treatments, and they die.
Yeah.
Or they come home and they die. And
yes.
People, skeptics will go, well, oh, come on. Of course, if they wouldn't have died, if they'd been healed, if John and God had the powers that are claimed for him. But no, it is their time sometimes. Sometimes
right,
he just made it easier for the last few weeks of their life, you know?
Right. And it would be very scary if there were beings on this planet that had power of life and death over others too, you know, whether that be a healer or a destroyer. Ultimately, we have self-responsibility, and we have a connection with God that's uniquely ours, and nobody is allowed to tinker with that. That doesn't mean we can't have healers, like you say, but the healing is to remind us of our own health and wholeness, not to put a magic coating over us and rescue us from problems. I got to quote a Bruce Springsteen line because it's come into my mind, but I think it's very apropos. It says, you and me, we were the pretenders. We let it all slip away. In the end, what you don't surrender, the world just strips away. And I thought that's very apropos of what we've just been saying, isn't it? Better to release it now from your death grip than have somebody come and take it from you later, you know, and God will. So it's better to freely give it up than have it forced from your hands. So this is very good advice, I think. Otherwise, we're in pretense. We're pretending to live a life that we think we're in control, and folks, we're not in control. You know, that doesn't mean we don't take charge and choose, but ultimately the grand plan, the scheme, the miracle within us is ultimately in control.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And in fact, it's one of the most humbling experiences. I mean, let me just take a back step. When I was in radio and television, I consider myself to be a fairly good guy. I had a fairly, you know, reasonable upbringing. I was not a scoundrel. But the ego really took over, and I know that I was a bit of an ass sometimes, I'll be honest. You just go down that road where you go, but I am in television. But I'm in radio.
Yeah,
you know, like that
way
means anything particularly. And when I went down to Brazil for the John and God thing, I remember, I have never been so humble. It's like you are stripped of everything that made you important, supposedly important. You're stripped of everything that gave you worldly presence that other people might look up to or might respect or envy or whatever. You're just a guy dressed in white, because you're asked dressed in white because of the energy flow thing. You're dressed in white, and you're among hundreds and hundreds of other people who are there for the same reason. And there's nothing special about you. You are just a person on this planet who is connected by the oneness that unites everybody in the same room you're in, or everybody in this village you're in. And you are just giving and receiving, releasing and allowing, being rather than doing.
Right.
And in that space of participation, I've never participated so much in all my life. I've never felt so connected to people. People of every race, every disease, everything, every age, everything. But I felt an absolute connective oneness. We were all part of the same tissue. We were all there for the same reason. And it strips away anything and leaves you in this humble place of acceptance and of submission. And I'm telling you, once you've been there, and I'm sure you must have been there in your life, I don't know your life, but I'm sure you've had moments of your own, but once you've been in that place, it is so hard to scramble back up and get back on the same track. Because once you've seen life in that light, again, when you've traveled or when you've met people from all different classes and economic levels, when you've done that, you can't return to the way you were. And if you try, you'll find it even more of a stress on your body, and you're more likely to be ill, I think. The John of God experience, he's seen about 9 million people so far. And I said in the book, actually, it's not necessarily the healer who heals, which refers back to your point you were saying just now, where we go to somebody and they have a special power to heal you. It's not the healer that heals. It's the patient's belief that the healer can heal.
Right.
That heals. And so it's about belief, and it's about submission to a greater force and allowing that to go through you, freed of egotistical barriers. Raising the consciousness to the level of wellness away from illness. That's what works. That's how we get well. It's not by some guy zapping you like he's Samantha in Bewitched. A wiggle of the nose and everything changes. That's not how it works. You are an active participant. And the only way you can do that is by getting your ego out of the way. And the only way life has of getting your ego out of the way is by bringing you some kind of perceived misfortune, illness, bankruptcy, divorce, whatever it is. It makes you take responsibility for who you are.
Right. You know, it's the hero's journey, isn't it, where we meet the monster, we meet the reverse, the river we can't cross, whatever it might be, but it shocks us out of our complacency. You've got a nice line in your book. You said healing happens at the point where expanded expectation meets raised consciousness, and I like that. So we expand what we think is possible for us, and in so doing, our consciousness is naturally raised, I think, because, you know, as they say, we take one step towards God, and God takes 100 steps towards us. So the minute we raise ourselves or expand our consciousness to believe that this is possible, then all of a sudden it is possible. And you've got another great quote from David Schwartz at the front piece of the book. It says, "Believe it can be done." When you believe something can be done, really believe, your mind will find ways to do it. Believing there's a solution paves the way to a solution. And Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, said, you can know by holding the thought that you know. And to me, that's very profound and true, you know, because once I open up a container that welcomes God's knowledge, then God flows in. I don't have to know. I just have to open up the container for God's wisdom to flow in and know through me.
Yeah, I mean, just to throw another quote at you, just to add to those two.
Since we're quoting.
since we're in quote mode, here you go.
Yeah,
this isn't a one-upmanship thing. It's just actually compliments what you've just said. I'm not a great quote guy because I can never remember a single thing. You got the book. I haven't.
Yeah,
book. In the Bible it says, and again, I'm hopeless on quotes, but it's just about whatever you ask for in prayer, believing, you shall receive. It's the essence of what you've just said. But I know that one of my favorite quotes, and I can remember it because it just, the moment I read it, it blew my mind. It was from Wayne Dyer, actually. And he says, "You don't get what you want in life, you get what you are." You don't get what you want in life, you get what you are. And I swear, I can still get chills. I give talks to students at a university here, and whenever I tell them that, there's a silence comes over the room, because there's some essential truth in that, that every single person of any age recognizes. You don't get what you want in life, you get what you are. So this raised consciousness idea, it's not just about saying, I'm a good person, I've surrendered, now make me well. That's not how it works. You have got to play your part. That means sometimes changing the habits of a lifetime in order to be well. It can sometimes mean getting down on your knees and saying, "I'm letting go of everything. Anything unhealthy in my life." In fact, I met a woman at a party, a birthday party, and her brother had stomach cancer. And she said everybody in the family was at odds with this guy and fraught with worry because he wouldn't have the surgery that the doctors were trying to give him. And she said he wouldn't do it. And what he did was he disappeared completely. He just went away and came back about 2 months later. He didn't go to John of God. He went somewhere else. He came back 2 months later, and he said, "I'm fine. Don't ever mention this again. Let's never give it a label again. Let's never label it disease and say I'm unwell. Let's not introduce that consciousness into our life anymore. I'm getting a dog. I'm leaving that wretched job that made me so tense. I'm changing my diet." He became a raw food vegan. And as of the time when I met this woman at the party, he was still alive. When doctors had given him, 6 months to live or 3 months to live. And it's about, there are many factors go into healing. But the first one is taking responsibility. We said that. The raised consciousness is another one. Raising your expectations beyond mere hope. Oh, I hope I get well. And applying yourself with drugs. That's not the answer. The answer is to heal from the inside, where you take responsibility and say, okay, disease is, and this is the John of God thing, really. This is what you go down there for, I suppose. Disease is not an affliction. It's not God's curse. It's not a why me thing.
Right.
This is a message from the body that says, you've been mistreating me, possibly, for the longest time. You've been doing this wrong. You're too stressed. You've had a bad diet. You've smoked, whatever it is. And I would like you to change. And that message may initially come through in a whisper. It may come through in a sort of a calling from afar. It may come through in a shouting in your ear, which is what happens when you get sick. Whatever it is, if you pay heed to the call, talking about the hero's journey, but if you
pay
heed
to the call, to go to break, sorry about that. All right, we'll be back
then
in
you'll
two,
be well. Then you'll
minutes.
Get well.
Heal, folks, heal. See you in 2 minutes. Bye-bye.
Are we nearing the end of the world? Reading the book of Revelation, you might think so, and it doesn't end well. But is it possible that the Bible's darkest story is a positive tale? Author Ed Townley, host of the Unity Online radio show, The Bible Alive, thinks so. A Bible enthusiast, Townley focuses on the metaphysical meanings rather than the literal text. In Kingdom Come, new from Unity Books, Townley takes a fresh approach to Revelation. The kingdom, Townley explains, doesn't await us in the afterlife. It's ours to experience today, as we learn to find the good even in our darkest challenges. Explore Revelation in a new light. Order the book Kingdom Come online today at unitybooks.org.
Does the idea of being a vegetarian or a vegan intrigue you? Is it something you've pondered? Listen each week as Victoria Moran, author of Main Street Vegan, shows you how to make the shift to a sustainable lifestyle for both you and the planet. Each week you'll learn about the latest on the vegan life. It's not just for celebrities and moguls, but for people just like you who want to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Guests will range from Unity ministers to vegan authors, activists, physicians, chefs, and even some of those glittery celebs. There'll be recipes, ideas, tips for going vegan at your own pace, and ways to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time for Main Street Vegan, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Now back to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to our third segment today. I'm with Cash Peters. There's awful lot to talk about, isn't there? And if you want to find out more about the processes of healing and what happens down there with John of God, get hold of this little book about believing, transformative healing power of faith, love, and surrender. We talk quite a bit about that idea of surrender. But I want to talk about Why Your Life Matters, which is Cash's latest book, and it's written, like I said, in novelistic format. And the protagonist has the archetypically British name of Nigel. I don't think we have any Nigels in America, at least there's a few and far between. But the lead character here is called Nigel, and I grew up with Nigels all around me. It seemed pretty normal until I moved to the States, and now it's become sort of a funny name, Nigel. But that's fine. This is an interesting book, isn't it? It's there's so much of New Thought and classic Unity spirituality embedded in it. Yes.
Yeah, but oddly, that wasn't the intention. The intention was, I'm sorry, it wasn't, because it was an attempt. Here's a personal question for you. Did you have a midlife crisis?
You. No, I've had crises all through my life. I didn't, not just in my life.
Your life has been one long crisis. But did you have one crisis. You could go, it's that kind of brink where you go, okay, I understand now. I'm crossing the threshold from middle age into being older, and it brings on a crisis. Have you had that?
Well, you know, I think when my first wife died, you know, I was 50, and that was a bit of a crisis, because it's not only the sadness of losing someone, but also you think, well, here I am after a 25-year marriage, you know, at 50, what do I do now? And so that was definitely a threshold experience. And when I hit 60, I began to think, man, I'm sort of old now, you know. I don't feel it. I still feel young, but old is as you make it, isn't it? I've discovered. And when I think back of 60-year-olds back when I grew up, you know, they were dodging old fuddy-duddies kind of thing, one step from the grave, you know. And even at 40, you were old back in the day. But, you know, I intend to stay youthful, so yes. You have to meet the crisis, but I think, you know, with exuberant victory, you know, that's my viewpoint anyway, that it wakes you up, but to charge yourself with the idea that, wow, you know, this moment is the best moment in your life, and that no regrets kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it will also, it very often for people, it reminds them that they haven't done enough, that they didn't shine brightly enough, that they had the potential to be a comet.
That's
and
true.
Instead stayed earthbound. I think that's the typical kind of male crisis. They put their kids through school, they had a mortgage, they had the car, they married, they did all the right things, but they get to about 50 or 55 and they go, but there are all these things I never did, and I might die soon. You know,
that's right.
The typical midlife crisis. Well, basically what happened to me was the reverse, I guess, in a way. I was very fortunate. Because of my career, which is reporting and travel, I got to do most of the things I ever wanted to do. And by the time I'd written the Believing book and that had made a huge impact on people and had a TV show, and it all seems very grand, but it was just the fulfillment of dreams I'd had when I was a lot younger. And I got to the point about 4 years ago where I had no dreams left. It was a very odd and critical moment. There was nothing more I wanted to do. And I was on a boat in Vienna, a cruise ship, a little kind of river cruise thing,
right.
Which comes back to that, you know, the trip down the Rhone with the boat. The book I was doing was, what was that book called? It was called Best Vacation Ever. And I was on this boat, and I was lying on the I don't even know what a boat's roof is called, but on the roof, looking upwards. I was actually lying there at night, looking up at the stars as we went by Vienna. And
right.
I remember thinking, you know, the vast panoply of the universe ahead of me there, thinking, I am completely insignificant. I've been so vibrant and for years, and I've been big on television, and I've been on radio, and all that dissipated. And I was left between, it was between me and the stars, me and God, me and my own soul, going, what am I here for, actually? Who am I, really? I had this real moment of, not even, I was going to say epiphany, it wasn't epiphany, it was a mystery. Of mystery. And I decided that I had learned a lot in my life. I'd spoken to all these thousands of people I mentioned before. And I would compile a book that put together in one place the answers that I had discovered during all my life, during all my travels. I tried to do it as a nonfiction book. It didn't work. It was actually quite boring. But as a piece of fiction, it worked incredibly well. And I wanted to explain to people, I use this word unifying again, but it actually is very valid, but the unifying effect of understanding what God is, of understanding who Jesus was, of understanding who we are and where we can be whole in life, as opposed to trying to be perfect or trying to be successful or trying to win, that our goal is about wholeness. And if we can achieve as much of the wholeness as we can in our lifetime, then we have done what we came here for. This was my desire when writing the book. And I've since found out when people have read it that they've been blown away by how much I knew, as though I knew this stuff, it naturally just kind of came to me. But it was a lifetime's journey of exploration, of talking to people, that came with this, you know, unified message about what life is. Once you take away all the ego, once you take away the dogma, once you take away all the ambiguity and the minutiae that people who studied theology put forward, you come with a very, very clear through line of what will make you whole, how to find your purpose, what God is. And I found it a very refreshing purging of this.
And I love that description. Yeah, I love that experience.
When it was done, I felt amazing. Not at the achievement of having done it, but that I had managed to lay it out in a way that people could understand. And it was outside of me now, not just inside of me.
Fascinating. Can I quote again? I know we've quoted a bit in this show, but it brings to mind my favorite quote of all time, perhaps, which is from Carlo Rinpoche, wonderful Tibetan Buddhist. And he said the very thing you're talking about. He says, "We live in illusion and the appearance of things. There is a reality. We are that reality. When you realize this, you discover that you are nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. That's all." And it's exactly
absolutely
what you're talking about, isn't it? You know, you're nothing and everything at the same time. You know, you weren't all the illusion and the pomposity of all that you thought you'd achieved. That's not the reality. But you are incredibly valid because you are the inlet and outlet of the everything. And that's an amazingly freeing thing to be.
Yeah, you're incredibly important, and you know you are, because, and you have a seat at the table for one simple reason. You're here.
Right.
If you weren't here, if you didn't have a seat at the table, you wouldn't, you know, you would have nothing to do. You're here for a reason, and you wouldn't be here if you didn't have that reason. And one of the greatest lessons I learned, and if everybody did this, if everybody learned this thing, it would change their lives. There's a rule in the book about expect nothing, accept everything.
Mm-hmm.
And once I was able to embrace that, release your expectations of how things should go, and accept what happens and deal with it responsibly, once I'd realized that, everything changed. Mm-hmm. That was the pivotal principle in the book, I think, that it's just about not having this massive expectation of how your life should be, but accepting the reality of how it actually is and dealing with that. And most of our problems, if not all our problems, come from the expectations being disappointed and reality being a pain in the nuts that we don't want to accept. If we can do away with expectations and just go with reality each time and deal with that on in trust and in faith, with faith with a little F, in faith, life becomes so much easier.
Well, you know, my little line that I have on my business cards and on my literature that I send out is be present to what is, and that's saying the same thing, isn't it? It's
yeah,
just
I
being present
to
your life, you know, present to the wonder and the dissatisfaction to everything and learn from it, understand from it. We have got a couple of minutes left. Can you tell us what the two Wendell's two golden principles are?
Well, oh no, but this is like a quiz. Well, I know one of them is what you fight fights back.
Right.
And that is so true of everything in life. Look at the way America is in the world right now. Look at the problems we're having everywhere. We fought and we thought we would win, and it all became about winning, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. What you fight will fight back, so don't fight. It's true of everything in your life. Don't fight disease. Don't fight it. It will fight back. Embrace it, surrender to it, and learn the lesson it's trying to teach you. We fight all the time, and the desire to fight is within us, to win, to beat, to overcome. It doesn't work. You're expending energy for nothing. And I can't remember what the second one is. It's a huge book.
I think one fits in. It's stop trying so hard. You know, just
stop
relax.
Trying. Well, yeah.
Relax and allow. It fits. They fit together. You know, you don't even have to push the river. In other words, you know.
No, and stop trying for perfection. Perfection is a waste of time. You're not perfect. As it says in Moonstruck, snowflakes are perfect. God's perfect. You're not. Strive, if you have to strive for something, strive for wholeness.
Yeah,
strive for wholeness and do what you can to deconstruct what's keeping you from being whole. That way, you'll have a far happier life. You'll lots less fighting, lot less struggle.
Yeah, wonderful way to finish up our show here. If you want to find out more about Cash, you can find him on the, what is it, CashPeters.com, right?
CashPeters.com, yeah.
And the latest book, which you may find fascinating, folks, is Why Your Life Matters. But if you want to find out more about John of God, it's a little book about believing. They're available in all the usual outlets. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Cash. Next week, spiritual wanderer and truth finder, Jake Ducey, who's the author of Into the Wind and The Purpose Principles. He joins me to talk about his extraordinary journey. He's only a young man in his mid-20s, left college, went on a six-month journey to discover himself, into the wind, as it says, and now goes around teaching these transformative principles, a little bit like Cash, if you like. Cash is an oldie. This guy's a young guy. That's a lie. Cash is not old. He's a very young at heart.
Not that old.
We are grateful for your presence on our show today, Cash. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's been a joy. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
All right. And thanks for listening, folks. Talk to you next week. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Does the idea of being a vegetarian or a vegan intrigue you? Is it something you've pondered? Listen each week as Victoria Moran, author of Main Street Vegan, shows you how to make the shift to a sustainable lifestyle for both you and the planet. Each week you'll learn about the latest on the vegan life. It's not just for celebrities and moguls, but for people just like you who want to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Guests will range from Unity ministers to vegan authors, activists, physicians, chefs, and even some of those glittery celebs. There'll be recipes, ideas, tips for going vegan at your own pace, and ways to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time for Main Street Vegan, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Inspiration only takes a moment. We invite you to consider these words from Unity author Charles Roth. Live deeply in the present moment. If you are going to work on the premise that real energy, real excitement, that feeling of being fully and enthusiastically alive comes from a source within you, then it follows that you have to spend some time getting acquainted, being at home in those far reaches of inner space. Peace is power, for out of stillness, strength is born, and out of inner harmony, productivity flourishes. Rest in that inner peace.
This meditative moment is brought to you by Unity.
Have you ever ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology. Available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.